This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome back to the Blues Focus podcast with me, Jamie Lawler, and I'm joined by Zach and Sam this week. How are we, boys, before we get to the guest?
All good, mate. All good. Very excited.
Same. Good. And we are also joined by former Blues left-back and fan favourite, Martin Granger. How are we doing?
Not too bad, gents. How are you?
Sam, all good,
all
man.
All good, mate. All good.
Excited for this. Start us up, Zach.
Yeah, so nice to have you on the pod, Martin, for a second appearance now. Very much appreciate your time with us this evening. I think we'll start with a bit about current Blues. Obviously, on the last episode, we talked a lot about yourself and your career, which, of course, we will do this evening. But a lot has changed at Blues since you were last on the podcast. We'd like to get a few of your thoughts on the current things going on. I think we'll start, as you were a left-back, with your position and the changes that have happened there. We've obviously got Lee Buchanan in now, who's been a very good addition to our side. I don't know if you've had too much of an opportunity to watch him, but what are your thoughts on Buchanan as a left-back? Or if you haven't, what are some of the key characteristics or qualities a left-back needs, given you are a very good left-back yourself back in the day?
Well, as you say, because I'm 150 miles away, I've not seen too much of him. But it looks like the manager's made some really good signings this year. And the key factors for me as a left back is just, you know, you've got to have a good delivery, good defensively, obviously work as a team, a bit of pace, which I didn't have, would be handy, and just support the player in front of you. And it sounds like the way you're talking about him that he's doing those things.
Yeah, so you touched on it briefly there, but what are some of the key characteristics you need, particularly as a modern-day left-back? Because as you said, pace is becoming more probably prevalent for defenders these days, not only full-backs, but centre-backs as well. But what are some key characteristics you think a modern full-back needs to cope, particularly in the Championship?
Well, I think the modern full-back these days are more a sort of a full-back come winger. They're more of a wing-back role. They play high, way a lot more advanced than what we used to when we played. Obviously, football's changed. It's got quicker. But I think you need to be a bit more all-round with technical ability. Obviously, you need a bit of pace. But they are more, I would say, there's not too many out-and-out left-backs anymore. They're more midfield wingers, but adapting to play full-back.
Absolutely. I think you need a more... I think, as you said, more attacking prowess these days, as well as those defensive capabilities in order to survive, particularly in the Championship as well. A lot of physicality where, you know, we're coming up against big opposition who you get your 6-1-6 to attack us these days, so a lot of strength and power about them. But talking a bit about yourself and your career, obviously played for a handful of clubs, obviously Blues most notably, Brentford, Colchester too. Let's talk about your first move from Colchester to Brentford. Went for £60,000, I believe it was. How much pressure comes with a big price tag? Because these days we're seeing players go for millions and millions of pounds, and obviously back then £60,000 was a lot of money. So what pressures come with that?
Well, but at the time it came out of the blue. I was playing for the reserves at the time, as a young lad at Colchester, and David Webb sort of just, I think he watched a few reserve games and see something he liked, and then just it sort of went from there. I wasn't even expecting it. I think players these days, if you look at how well Jude Bellingham has took that price tag, it's not affected him. It's just a number for people to talk about. He's like, you do your business on the pitch and try to forget about those things.
Hmm. Jamie, wanna?
Yeah, sure. So Martin, I've spoken to about 10 different people today who are older Blue Noses, and every time I've mentioned your name, without fail, I've had, he was my favourite player growing up. He's honestly my favourite player. So, obviously, a lot of our readers have you as one of the best fullbacks to play in a blue shirt. Would you agree with that, the way you played? And who would be up there for you?
I'm not going to say, I'm the best left-back Blues have ever had. It's just, I think they just like my style of play. I was aggressive. I loved the tackle. I scored the odd goal. It was just the way, the committed way I played. Probably today I'd be off the pitch getting sent off probably every other game, because you can't blow on it. So
I was going to say you blow on someone to send it off nowadays.
Yeah. So I mean, these days it's all set out to be an attacking game, which is entertaining, but defending is an art as well. And tackling is an art, which you don't really see too much of anymore. Derby games these days are—they're not really derby games, are they?
Mm. Yeah, I do agree in that. So they've almost lost, sort of. I think Blues Villa is a derby we haven't seen in a very long time, obviously because of Villa's recent success and everything being in the Premier League. But I do agree in that. Even you look at Man U, Man City these days, or fixtures like that, there just doesn't seem to be that hatred. And I can't remember which game it was, but there was, I think United played City last season. Was it the FA Cup final, United City? I think it was. Yeah. And there was, I can't remember exactly who it was, but there was pictures and videos of just like all the fans mingling and walking up together. And I think you wouldn't see that as such these days. And we've actually got a question about Blues Villa a bit later, but I'll ask it now because we've brought it up. You obviously played in a few of those games. What is it like? What is the second City derby like? How heated can it get?
Yeah, I mean, back there a few challenges in, but that's the sort of games that really gets you up for it as a player. And I'm not being funny. I've played against Villa twice and won twice, so I haven't lost against them yet. Well, no, I ain't gonna lose against them now because I don't play. But it's one of those games where I lived in Birmingham for 8 years, supporters who was friends. And let me tell you, when we turned them over, it was fantastic. They've not stopped giving them stick, because I had stick for 8 years off of these people, and they don't like it. I mean, I'm a Tottenham supporter, and Arsenal fans are the same.
Mm.
You know, and I think Tottenham and Birmingham are the bigger clubs out of the two. So it was nice to get you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a lot of pressures with playing in a derby, but I guess a game-to-game basis for Blues, how do you cope with those pressures that come with that as well? Because obviously, derbies are big games, but things like cup finals or just a general league game, how do you cope with that pressure?
I just think you just get into your own routine. I used to get to the ground 20, 30 minutes before everyone else, and if I knew I was playing, I'd get changed straight away. It just becomes normal. It's just, it's like you guys doing your job. The crowd's there, you know they're there, but you're there to play the game. And then sometimes the atmosphere can get the better of you, but it just becomes, as you go along in your career, it just becomes a norm. It's funny, it's difficult to explain, because people go to, like now, people say, how did you play in front of 30, 40,000 people? I just say, well, it was my job. It just felt normal.
So is it something you can shut out then when you're on the pitch? Can you ignore? And I guess sort of touching on that is maybe a little different for players these days with social media. I think in particular, I think it's a lot easier for these younger players to, you know, feel that potential abuse they're getting online through social media. But when you were playing, is it still tough to block out those fans on the pitch, or just the general comments outside of football, or is that fairly easy to do for yourself?
I think I snapped just once at a supporter, and yeah, about a 10-year-old son, and they, my family, and they said the most disgusting things for 45 minutes. Mm. And I went over to them at the end of the game and told them to let it go. Mm. 10 minutes later, the police were coming to our dressing room and said it was going to caution me.
Really?
So that's, yeah. So because you're the other side of the fence, you're not allowed to say nothing. Sometimes things can get to you. And sometimes you do get reaction. But in the most of it, you just used to think, blot it out. Sometimes you could have a bit of banter back with them and they would accept that. But a lot of the time you just get pelters, so you just got on with it.
Sam?
Hi, Martin. Yeah, I was just going to sort of add on that, what you're speaking about, sort of the hostilities and the recent sort of crowds or whatever. What would you say is like the best atmosphere you've played in, like in a Birmingham shirt? Because I'm sure, you know, playing in front of, 40,000 fans, as you mentioned, and also the Blues Villa games. What would you say is sort of like the most hostile atmosphere and the best atmosphere you've played in?
Well, the most hostile would have been Millwall away in the semi-final. Pound for every time I was going to be killed. I'd have been living in Dubai. but that and Leeds. Leeds is another one, a real hostile place to play. But the best atmosphere I've played in, ever, and I believe we played in two cup finals, was the Ipswich game at home. 4-1, semi-final. That still puts the hairs up on the back of your neck. Unbelievable night that. That was louder than when we won promotion at the Millennium.
It's just one of the things, isn't it, with atmospheres like that, where the videos don't do it justice, I think, because, like, you know, being there on that day, you would have experienced it in full. And as you said there, Martin, about the fact that that was louder than sort of other grounds that are bigger. And it just goes to show that when, you know, St Andrews is rocking, we have that atmosphere, then it could be a hard place for anything to come to, because especially it's at the time.
With the song that they've got as well, once that starts, I've not played at a better ground for supporters and atmosphere than Birmingham's. I used to love going and play there every week. That would give me an inch straight away, especially when it was full. Unbelievable.
It's one of the things, isn't it? Like, we're just waiting for the whole ground to be open once again, because we've been out without like a full capacity stadium in, 3.5 years. And we're just waiting for, the full stadium to be back. And I think when it is back, we can make a sort of real charge then towards like the promotion places, because how we started the season and the new investment in the club as well. But speaking about some of the occasions that you played in, and sort of, you know, the big occasions, the big players, who would you say is the toughest opponent you faced?
Toughest? I mean, people have said this to me before, and like I was lucky enough to play against Henri, Wiltord, Vieira, Shearer, and all. They're all a different specimen, you know. But the most difficult players I found to play, like, and I'm not just saying this because he was a Blues player, I played against him many times, we had battles, was Paul Devlin, John McCarthy, Jamie Lawrence at Leicester, and he played at Bradford, and people like Gareth Ainsworth, because they wasn't just sort of quick. They wasn't all particularly blessed in skill. They were quick, direct, and I used to always start the game, and if the game started off and he got the ball, I think, right, I'm going to stick a real hard tackle on you first 5-10 minutes, and then normally a winger wouldn't come back for like another 20, so you sort of half done your job. But those four I mentioned there, if I'd have done that to them 2 minutes later, I'd been looking at the clouds because they'd just whacked me up in the air. So that's when I found them quite difficult to play against, because they wasn't like a normal winger. They would really dig into you as well. I mean, I remember having a few battles with Debs when he was at Sheffield United. I think he gave me 12 down both shins.
Wow.
And so that sort of player, I mean, I can deal with the tricky players and all that, because the more chances I've got to get the ball, because you're touching it loads of times. And when you've got the ball, they don't normally close you down, the tricky ones, but when like the likes of McCarthy, Devlin, Ainsworth, Lawrence, they'll be sticking one through your shin as you're clipping it down the line. So that was all the most difficult opponents for me, personally.
Mm. And that's an interesting sort of point you make there, because I think you look at the modern day winger and they are probably smaller players who are very technical, very fast, very quick. So for you personally, you find that the bigger strikers who are going to give you problems in terms of physicality and strength tougher to deal with compared to maybe the more quick, nimble players.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong, pace is a killer. But people, I mean, the four that I mentioned were all probably similar. They were all, if I knew there were certain wingers, I could go and really stick a hard tackle on, and I wouldn't see them for the rest of the game. Where if you stuck one on them four, my afternoon's going to be really busy because they're going to be sticking it back on me. So that gives you something else to think about, and you think, right, they're not going to go away. They're going to keep feeding him the ball. Where if I've given him a whack to start with, he's not going to want the ball. But them four, like, as I mentioned, they kept wanting it and they kept coming back here. And I used to love them sort of games, but it just make your afternoon a little bit more difficult.
Absolutely. And stress. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we've spoken a lot about your time at Blues in the last episode. I'd like to get a bit more insight as to your time at Colchester and Brentford, though, particularly Brentford now, because they've made big strides, obviously, in the Premier League now and run fantastically as a club. But what was your time like at both Colchester and Brentford?
Well, Colchester was really as a young lad. And back then, I mean, we had a manager who was a player at Birmingham, his name's Roy McDonough, but I call him Roy McDonough. It'd be a real drinking culture back then, and he used to just play all his mates, all the ones that went out on a Friday night for a game. So it wasn't particularly great memories there for me. I was really happy, obviously, when I left, and obviously went to Brentford, which Brentford was a really, really fantastic family club, to be honest. And I didn't up at the start when Birmingham came in for me. It was just David Webb pulled me in the office after I think we played Cardiff and said, the club are in trouble financially and I've sold you. And I was like, okay, where am I going? And he said, you're off to Birmingham. And being a London lad back then and young, I didn't really know too much of the clubs. Sort of, I mentioned it to my dad and he went, no, son, he said, you've got to go. So he said, Birmingham's a sleeping giant, which is still resting as we speak, but hopefully we're going to get back there. And and that was it. And then I left and that was history. I was at Birmingham for, 9 years?
Wow. So there was had no say in the matter at all. It was, you're at Brentford, you're going to Birmingham, end of.
Well, I could have probably kicked up a stink. But after I spoke to my dad, he went, no, you've got to take the opportunity. I was just like, all right, okay, what happens now? Because, you know, and I come up, I met Barry Fry at the Grosvenor House Hotel, actually, before the PFA awards, and went to Sunday. I'm sure it was a Sunday, and we agreed to sign, and that was it, and I was up there on the Monday.
Wow. And is that something you get in football today? Would footballers get more of a say, or is that like, because that seems crazy to me that you're just told you're going here and that's no negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, I could have said no, but after speaking to my dad, the answer was always going to be yes. But I mean, footballers these days they have too much say in everything, don't they? You know, there's no one bigger than any football club. I find it hard sometimes to even watch some of the some prima donnas and all of that, but different era though, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on Colchester then. You said it was quite a drinking sort of party atmosphere. Was it just the football didn't feel as serious there, or you wanted more of a challenge?
No, it was. I mean, we used to. It was me and another young lad, Steve Restrick. We used to travel away with a team on a Friday. Sometimes I'd be in the team, sometimes I wasn't. The team would go out drunk. We'd play on a Saturday away. I think I remember the last one I can recall was Mansfield away. We got beat 5-0 because everyone's been out on the drink the night before. So it wasn't. I mean, we got relegated to the conference, back up, relegated conference. it was, I mean, back then it was all drinking culture, and it wasn't a very well-run club financially, a bit of bother. Although I think someone said there was always like £2 million in debt, and back then that was a lot of money. So for me, it wasn't my favourite time in football.
No. But as you said, you then got the move to Brentford, and as we said, now they are a club who are performing very, very well. Given their size and everything, they are doing an incredible job in the Premier League. How nice is it to see a club perform that well from sort of where they began, really?
Yeah, I mean, even when I was there, the club were in debt financially, and that's why they sold the likes of myself and Nicky Forster. But it's just someone's come in and obviously run the ship right, and reaping the rewards. And now I think they paid, it was unheard of, they paid £34 million for a player. Little old club like Brentford, you know, and they didn't look out of place in the Premier League. Obviously got a good manager and a good scouting system, which they're picking up players for not a lot of money.
And are there any sort of key points in your times at both Brentford and Colchester where you feel you could really kick on? Because obviously Blues is where you made the majority of your appearances. I think it was around 250. But were there moments outside of Blues where you thought, okay, I'm really moving up here and proving my worth?
Well, I mean, at the time I got the move at Brentford, I was just actually playing well, as it transpires. But I know Barry Fry wanted to sign me, but Ed Steen and David Ayres, they told him not to sign me. So everyone has their opinions. But at the time, you thought you're playing well enough, something could happen. But I was happy there. It wasn't like I was trying to get a move or anything like that. I was just, I suppose when you're happy and you're playing well, things go right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And moving on to a bit about yourself and your set pieces, you were known as a bit of a dead ball specialist, and that's something that was quite key to your game. How important was that, just to have that additional asset as a player?
Yeah, I mean, even when I was like a junior at school and things like that, I always used to practice out and have a bag of balls for half hour and just whipping in corners, free kicks, both ways, putting mannequins up. And I'd end up trying to whip a free kick over the wall from 6 yards instead of 10 yards so you could get that pace up and down. But where you see people nowadays, apart from, I mean, I think James Ward-Prowse has probably got to be one of the best around at the moment. People just try and put too much on it. And you look at it and I'm just thinking they must have set piece coaches just to teach these people like body position. You haven't got to stand at a right angle, you know. You just need to get that ball up and down with pace, and with the modern day ball, there's not many people who are going to save you if you get it in the right place.
Agree. Sam, do you
wanna... Yeah, I was just going to add on that, Martin, with like the free kicks and everything. I suppose nowadays you've got the likes of James Ward-Prowse that's like a bit of a free kick specialist, but I don't know, you seem to be seeing like a lot less of these like goals that happen from like long distance and that. I don't know if it's a thing now where people are sort of coached to like, you know, work it in or whatever, just like to be more sort of like intricate with the pass and everything. But how would you say sort of the game's changed from then to now? You mentioned earlier about the physical side of it, but what else do you think has changed about the game?
Yeah, I just think the modern day game is just all about, okay, we want to keep possession, we want to play good football. But sometimes it's just overplaying. There's only certain teams with the best players can play that way, like Man City. I mean, the Pep way, where they're rolling it out from the goalkeeper. But lots of football, and you just think sometimes go forward a bit quicker, start entertaining going that way. It's just, I mean, I watch it, and like the wife will say, "Well, you're watching that football." And I'm like, no, it bores me sometimes. It's just like watching a testimonial. Ball goes sideways, backwards, keeper, sideways, back. I like the football. I like, not saying smash the ball long, but play good football, but go and play in their half. Yeah. I mean, do supporters, like, I'll ask you, do you like sitting there when the ball's getting rolled sideways and backwards for three or 4 minutes, and then all of a sudden they've got nowhere to go, they knock it long and they lose it?
There's
only certain teams in the world that can play like that.
Mm. Do you always think
statistics based now, isn't it? Like with all the statistics and, you know, looking into it with all these, like, you know, we see it in the Championship with Southampton, you know, they look to keep the ball, but then they get smashed 5-0 by Sunderland. So it just goes to show that the statistics don't necessarily mean, you know, everything.
I mean, I watched, my lad was at Norwich, and I use this as an example, when he was 13, he went to Ipswich, and I was gobsmacked that Norwich, we went 5-0 up in about 23 minutes because the goalkeeper kept rolling it out on the edge of the box or in his box to the players that were there. They kept losing it and kept scoring, but the coaches kept encouraging it. And I was just thinking, if they keep making the same mistakes on things. Mm. Now, I just think sometimes it's just they're just forcing it just to try and play. Yeah, obviously, you want to keep the ball. You don't want to keep seeing the ball smashed 50 yards that way constantly for the whole game. But you've got to mix the game up. But now it's becoming too samey for me. I mean, I don't really watch the international. I watch the last half hour. I'll just find that boring because we've got a manager that plays with an handbrake.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, do you almost think the game is maybe a bit too tactically? Because it's, I think a lot of teams these days can, and you know, I'm not too involved in behind the scenes of football, so I don't 100% know. But from the outside looking in, it almost feels like games are so heavily tactically played, and players and teams are told to do this and do that, when sometimes it's just about making those decisions on the pitch. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, we got told to play a certain way, and like wanted to get it in a second striker and it come back in the midfield and you go wide. But if it ain't working, we would go, right, sack that, we'll do something else until half time. And if we do it and it don't go right and we get a bollocking for it, then so be it. But we would try and change it ourselves. But I'm a Tottenham supporter, and Jose Mourinho and Conte were the most boring managers ever. You know, and I want to be entertained a little bit, you know, and you want to get bums off seats and get the atmosphere going, because that will give you another 10-15%. Well, I keep seeing people roll it out, go sideways, backwards, and I'll turn it over. I mean, I'd rather watch Emmerdale.
I mean, who are some managers you played under who you could play the way you wanted to play as a team? Who are some of your favourite managers that adopted the play style that yourself preferred, the team preferred, the fans preferred?
I tell you, he was a really good manager. I went on loan to Coventry for 7 games, and Eric Black was one of the best I played under. And I'd always go back to the best manager coach I've ever played under was my youth team manager at Colchester, Steve Foley. Okay. He Norwich for a few years, but he was the best. I've never played under anyone better. And I will give a shout out to Mark Bowen as well. He was very good.
And what made them such good managers? Why did you enjoy playing them under them so much?
Well, it's just the way they encourage you to play. You know, I mean, Mark, and the way he encouraged you to defend, and you're just thinking, yeah, I'll have some of that. And Steve Foley, he was all about passing the ball, but he encouraged you to pass it in the right way, not like we'll go three sideways, 2 back. You know, I don't know. It was just their style, the way they sort of impose themselves on you to do the right things and you got things, and they would encourage you sometimes. Do that again, but if you make a mistake, then you know. Then try not to make that mistake again. You know, they gave you that sort of confidence in yourself to go and do what you know you can do.
Yeah, I think managers play such an important part in players' confidence and development, and they can be so key. I mean, as we mentioned, you obviously played left back for a lot of your career. How did you get into the position of left back? Because as a kid, most players want to be strikers and forwards and score the goals. But why left back for you? Why was that your key position?
I was a left winger when I was a kid. The reason I was a left winger was because I used to get the ball out of feet, and I used to sledgehammer of a left foot, so I used to score loads of goals. Just as you come against better opposition and quicker fullbacks, I wasn't particularly blessed with pace, but I could go and close the ball down over, like, if it was in a circle, I could go and wrap the ball, as they say, and get it off you. So I sort of went backwards gradually, left wing, it was, well, left of a three up front, then left south. It just come naturally, and I found it natural to have the game in front of me, where you find players are really good with the gut, I found it natural for me to have the game in front of me where players could play with a game at the back of them, you know, it's just eight on the end. And I adapted to it quite well.
Yeah, the position, and I guess being a left winger and a left back, you probably can carry over similar abilities to what you did going forward as going back. And I think particularly today, if you can have a full back that can so effectively go forward, I think it just elevates your game, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you look at, wouldn't look out of place today as a modern day fullback, would it? You know, because he could play in between those quite comfortably. I don't think he'd be doing too many tackling, but he could get up and down. He was quick. He could cross the ball. Someone like him would probably suit today. I might have to take up the sweeper role, I would reckon, because I don't think I've been quick enough.
Jamie, sorry, I'm hogging all the questions, mate. Is there anything you want to ask?
Yeah, so mainly because, like you just said, you're a winger who then went to play left back as he got older. Obviously, when your professional career started, I'm assuming you started as a left back at that point. I've always just wanted to know, like, in terms of, because you never backed out of a 50-50. Was that something that was put into you through training, or is that just how you've always played football? Is that always just a mental thing for you? Like, okay, who you got? I'm going for it. I'm having it.
I think it's a mental thing, because when I was a youngster at school and then school boy, I never really tackled anyone. I used to, I'm not afraid, but I think sometimes it's a fear of getting hurt. And then all of a sudden, you go to fullback and then become a little bit, I don't mean that in a bad way, I mean like really thumping in the tackles. And when you find out that it don't really hurt that much, then I sort of enjoyed it in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, playing in that left back position again, it is very physically challenging, as we said. And you did play a few games at centre half, did you?
I played the year I won the Player of the Year awards. I played every position that year except in goal.
Wow! So an adaptable player.
I played right wing for 7 weeks. Loved it.
Wow! So what's it like having to adapt?
Yeah. Oh, I loved it, because I played centre midfield for a couple of months as well. I went up front at Sunderland for 20 minutes, played right back, played centre half. But the thing is, if you're out of position, you play crap, it ain't your fault.
Yeah, of course. So yeah. How hard is it to adapt between positions?
I found it pretty easy, really. It's just, I really enjoy playing centre midfield for a period, and on the right, because you could cut. I weren't too great up front though of making the runs. That's a bit of a specialised position. But I think I got chucked up there at Sunderland. We were losing. I actually scored, I think. It is nice to try in different positions, but I prefer to play left back. But if it got me in the team, I'd just play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that a lot of players probably don't possess these days, or you wouldn't see managers do as much probably. I mean, you'd never see Van Dijk go up front for Liverpool or play on the wing. It just doesn't happen these days. But obviously back then it was more of a dumb thing. Why was that? Was it lack of numbers? Was it injuries? Or was it just you were that much of a versatile player and managers were comfortable with playing you all across the pitch?
Yeah, you've got that. And there's no, like, I mean, Darren Percy, done it to him a few times. Me, they stick you up front because they know you're going to cause a bit of pressure or a bit of havoc, because I'm going to throw my head in, I'm going to stick my foot in, I'm going to smash people about so we can try and get the run of the ball to get back in the game. So probably just basically it calls havoc.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of the time it's to offer something different and give teams something to think about, because you see a lot of the tactical substitutions that are made these days. You might see a 5'7" tricky winger come on for a 6'2" strong, powerful striker. So I imagine having something different to offer maybe in the last 20-30 minutes benefits both yourself development-wise and the team highly to go and get another goal.
Yeah, that's it. I think sometimes it's just throws it just to try and mix up your game and muck up their game. But you don't see too much of it nowadays. I mean, the Premiership, you have 11 substitutions now anyway, don't you? So you can have, I think, what was the game Man City played the other day? Two goalkeepers on the bench. Why do you need two goalkeepers on the bench?
Yeah, I know.
But you can't do that in the Championship. If you can do it in the top league, why can't more games in the Championship if you have two half-decent cup runs? All right, if you're not in the if you're in the Champions League, go all the way, you're going to play more games. But in the Championship, you just play as many games. Why can't you have 11 substitutes?
Yeah, that's true. I completely agree, yeah. We've spoken a lot about Blues, a bit about Brentford and Colchester. You obviously mentioned your time at Coventry as well. You played 7 games. Your Wikipedia also shows you played for... Is that Wivenhoe Town? Is that how you say it?
Wivenhoe Town.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. How was your time there?
Yeah, but that was when I was in YTS back then, not apprentice. So I went on loan to a club called Concord Rangers. They were local in Essex, Wivenhoe Town and Chelmsford City. Yeah, that's a real eye opener because they are probably, I mean, Chelmsford not so much now, but they were, I think it was Ryman Premier, Beezer Holmes League, and there was another one that was lower than that. But that sort of mans you up a little bit as well, because we used to have proper reserve and it used to be called Combination League, and you'd play against Averley, Wokingham Town. You, as a 16, 17 year old, you'd be playing against seasoned non-league players that kick lumps out you. So you had to grow up very quickly.
So how important your times at those clubs in terms of your development? How much did they help you get into the professional game?
Yeah, but I found at early doors, you make mistakes as a youngster in the first team and it's costing you points, you're going to get some bollockings. And it does man you up a little bit because you get bashed and bruised all over the place, and it toughened me up. And I was doing that from 16 years old. You wouldn't do it now. I mean, if you was at Man City, you'd be going on loan to Leeds, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be going on loan to Concord Rangers.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of even small things, we touched on it earlier about hostile atmospheres and that, but I guess at smaller non-league clubs, you can probably hear it a little bit more. Do you find that it's a different kind of pressure playing for those sort of teams?
Yeah, but I mean, the expectation, I've got a little bit of a funny side because I went on loan to Fisher Athletic. We were in London back in the day. They were a good non-league side. And I was a little bit chunky back then as a YTS player. And I had a player that played for Colchester called Paul Roberts. And he was a Londoner. And he had a friend that was a Fisher fan. And he ran up and down for 90 minutes. And I was 16 years old, shouting out, come on, Salad. And because there's not a lot of people there, you hear everything.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think the good thing about non-league football, and I've tried to get into it a little bit more the last few seasons, is it's such a different experience. I think both as a player and as a fan, it just feels the culture between big football, big teams, big clubs, your top 6 Premier League Championship, and then your smaller clubs, like I've been going to a few Kidderminster Harrier games, all that sort of stuff. I think it's such a different experience. Was it, obviously playing in the professional game is great and fantastic and all, but did you really value and enjoy your time at these smaller clubs where maybe you have the opportunity to, I know you've got the pressures of wanting to push further, but maybe where you can enjoy your football a little bit more and play with it a little bit more relaxed?
But ultimately, every week you want to win, but then you see how much it means to so many supporters. I mean, we went to Weymouth with an old town, and I think they took about 20 people. And I think we won that day 3-2. And the joy on their faces, you know, and it's probably cost them an arm and a leg to go halfway across the country. And you do get a little bit more intimate with them as, like, personal-wise, they get to know you very quickly because there's only a few of them. And you want to win for them, like you do for any supporter.
It's almost that community feel, isn't it? And that togetherness, and you probably feel a bit more like a family. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you want to win through supporting. Don't worry about yourself. It's like winning for you guys. I mean, don't get me wrong, I want to win, but I want to win for the football club.
Absolutely. And I guess just to finish off, because I think we've covered most things, your time at Coventry, made 7 appearances there. How was that experience for you?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, at the time, I had West Ham, Trevor Brooking ring me up, and he said he wanted to take this on loan at the same time as Coventry. And this is no disrespect to Coventry, but West Ham were further up in the division. They were going for promotion, and I just said to him, look, I think your expectations were a little bit more than where my fitness was at the time. Coventry, because they were sort of, I think they was in the bottom half, and it was, I thought it was somewhere I could go and it wouldn't be so much pressure, because I was still really struggling with my knee at that time. And then I played 7 games, got recalled, and that was it. My knee collapsed again, didn't it? So yeah, I really enjoyed myself at Coventry. Fans were loved, but and obviously we had Eric Black, who's a really good coach.
And how tough was it sort of for your football career to end through injury? It's obviously not the way you probably wanted things to finish for you.
No, I felt like, I mean, I was one of the fittest at the football club. So fitness wise, I was right. It was just physically, it was impossible. Not a bad way to go out against Man United, but I would have liked to have, if I didn't stay at Birmingham, obviously 32, 33, 34, I'd still play now if I could.
Yeah, absolutely.
You scored on your final game as well, if I'm not wrong, Martin, right?
The free kick.
Yeah, I actually come on a sub and I took a, and it actually hit the wall in the shins, and that's where my knee popped. And then we got another one, and Brucey was shouting at me to take it, and I couldn't. I didn't want to because of my knee, and then I took it. And we scored, so I was lucky. But that was it. Yeah, that was the last game.
No, fantastic. And we'll finish on Sam. You all right to ask this the Trevor Francis question as well? We've got that.
Yeah, I was just going to add this on the end because obviously the sad news that Trevor Francis passed away a couple of months ago, and obviously he was your manager at Birmingham for a number of seasons. Yeah. What was it like to play under Trevor Francis, such a legend at the club and a well liked and respected figure in football?
Yeah, I mean, Trevor was Trevor. Obviously, even when he was a manager, he was the best footballer at the club. He used to join in training, and he was unbelievable. Like, if he was doing crossing and finishing and it was breaking down, he'd come over and he'd just get it, whip the ball in. That's how you do it, laugh and walk off. And yeah, Trevor had his moments. He was sometimes a bit temperamental, very passionate, wanted to win for the I got on really well with him, and it's really sad that he's gone too early. But hopefully the club will do something in his memory, like maybe a statue or that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Because first million-pound player, you know, and he was some player.
He was.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic player. I think that's pretty much everything covered. Sam, Jamie, do you have any more additional questions? Or
I just think...
go on, Jamie.
Sorry, just a quick one. Just a boring one, really. But a lot of people seem to think that this is a bit of a shock season for us, or we're a bit of a dark horse. What important credentials do you think in a team would be needed to get promotion from the Championship to the Prem? A lot of people say it's the hardest league in the world.
Yeah, I put something on Twitter about hopefully the club will do it the right way. And don't get me wrong, but everyone wants to gain the Premiership, but there's no point getting in the Premiership if you're not geared up and you get relegated straight away. I'd like to see the new owners do it slowish, you know, spend the right sort of money. Don't start signing players and they're getting 60, 70, 80,000 pound a week and you're going back down again and you can't afford it, then they're going to pull their money out. But these people, you see, they've gone in and look like they mean business and they're going to do it the right way. And hopefully they do it the right way, a model where it's sustained and they stay there. instead of going up, coming back down, going up, coming back down. Don't go up for 3 years. Mm. You want it like the Brentford model, you know, that sort of thing. And hopefully that'll have some sustainability. Don't get me wrong, I think Birmingham fans would love to be a yo-yo club for the next up and down, up and down. But wouldn't it be nice to stay there for 5 or 6 years? Even longer?
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, we've seen a lot of clubs in recent years. Norwich is one that springs to mind. Maybe Watford a little bit, that constantly go up and down. And you might not agree, but I think Luton could potentially become one of those clubs. I think they've invested and are almost preparing for life in the Championship again this season. But yeah, as a fan, certainly we just want that stability. We want to slowly push up the league because we understand that success doesn't come overnight. We'd like to get a good squad and a good foundation going, and hopefully can push up to that playoff place and maybe even higher to win the league, who knows. And then once you get to the Premier League, you just want that stability. You want to invest in the right places so you can stay there. I think Nottingham Forest have done it very well in terms of the players they've bought in. We'll just have to see what happens with Luton. I mean, do you have any predictions for the footballing season, both Championship, Premier League? Any thoughts on any clubs, particularly for yourself as a Spurs fan?
Well, I mean, looking at Ange Postecoglou at the moment, they're making all the right noise. They need to sign a few more players. I think Man City will win the Premier League. Blues will get in the playoffs. Winning the Championship, that's a tough one, because you could probably 5 or 6 teams. But I'd rather, what would you rather go up automatically or in through the playoffs?
Good question. I mean, me personally, I'd love playoffs.
If you're guaranteeing me that I go to Wembley and we go up, fantastic. Yeah, give me Wembley all day. I've been Wembley twice, one as an England fan, one as a Birmingham fan. 2011 Carling Cup final, and obviously to watch us smash San Marino 5-0. So if I could carry on my 100% Wembley record for the team I want to win, beautiful.
And Spurs, thoughts for the season? You've started well, second in the league. How do you think things will go for yourselves?
He's playing some good stuff, which Spurs supporters have been craving for the last 4 or 5 years. But I do think I'm one of the ones where I'm happy, because Harry Kane, you don't know whether he's a striker now or a midfield player. Don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic finisher, but I think you could go and get more of a team player out there. Because I went to watch Spurs last game of the season at home against Crystal Palace, and every time Spurs got the ball, it looked like they had to give it to Harry Kane. You can't run it. You can't play a team like that. Don't get me wrong, he scored. But for me, I like a striker to play as a striker. It's like the other night, I watched the last 30 minutes of England game, and they said, oh, there's 5 in the box. He's crossing it. He's supposed to be a striker. Why is he not in between the sticks? You know, I like strikers to play as strikers, but I may be old fan.
No, I agree.
Not at all. Nothing more infuriating for me as a Birmingham fan, Martin, when you look up and you see Lukas Djukovic is on the left wing whipping it in, you're like, why are you not in the box?
I mean, that's probably one of the best parts of his game as well, attacking the ball in the air, and he's, 6'2", 6'3", powerful.
Yeah.
Get yourself in the box.
Completely agree. Yeah. So, just to finish off then, top four, is that the realistic expectation this season for Spurs? Or can you maybe win the league? Who knows?
Nah, I don't think they'll win the league. They're probably three or four players. Quality players, shall I? Maybe top six. Getting to Europe again, I suppose. I think getting in the Champions League, everyone wants to finish in the top four. For me, Champions League should just be the champions. Finishing falls failure, isn't it, really? But you get rewarded for it. But that's modern day football.
And just quickly, actually, why do you support Spurs? Is it where you grew up? Is it family connections?
Yeah, North London. My granddad was a Spurs supporter. My brothers were all been Spurs supporters. But when I was a... my oldest, he's 27 now, but when he was at school as a junior, he would decide he wanted to be an Arsenal supporter, but we soon knocked that out of him.
That's yeah, like, can't like have that. Just can you?
Yeah, no chance. It's like having a son, having being a Villa fan, it just can't happen, can it?
Never.
Unacceptable.
So, it's been the Blues Focus podcast, guys. Please follow us on all our socials. It should be on the side or down. Obviously, we're on YouTube, Spotify, all that other stuff that Tommy usually knows about that Jamie doesn't because he's not too technical. And yeah, this podcast will be up soon. So thank you, Martin, for your time again. You've been amazing, honestly. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Cheers, gents.
Cheers, man.
Cheers, Martin. Keep right on.
Social Podcast Network.
There's always something new and exciting happening in Montgomery County, Maryland. Join podcaster and business leader Kelly Leonard and me, Bob Levy, on another episode of Something to Talk About, where we speak with industry leaders making an impact in our county.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you've got your McNugget share box ready to go, your mates are already booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.